You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
It's the first time that Apple have actually decided to tell people about something that they're developing.
High-speed broadband. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
The three main spamming countries are the United States, China, and South Korea.
And I've got some residual powers.
Sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
Senator Coonan, the voice of reason.
There's a couple of systems on a gantry that's actually based on a military missile tracking system.
You put the date on ePray, and you get a whole service just on
How does it go?
IE7, you were having trouble installing it because you had a genuine copy of Windows that wouldn't validate properly. What did you have to do to get past that?
Built a new machine.
But how hard can it be?
Well, it's not hard at all.
At the end of the day, the photography is all about the person's eye and what they see.
If you find something that's inappropriate about your child, you need to do something about it because it will not go away.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm your host, Andrew McCollum. Well, the Howard government's plan for a $1 billion rural broadband network is dead, as the federal government scrapped the Opel WiMAX network on April the 2nd, on the grounds that the contractors failed to meet the required conditions. Surprise, surprise. Many in the know are saying this wasn't completely unexpected, and Tech Talk Radio's own mobile data expert, Mark Diggins, questioned the technology and method of the rollout last year, when the contract was originally awarded. Others in the field say the previous government's idea was more like a hopscotch sort of solution, something for here and something for there. So having a national approach and then lingering on something on the side like Opel was not really something that fitted the new government's sort of plan of action. The Communications Minister, Senator Stephen Conroy, says his department has established that Opel WiMAX would only cover 72% of underserved premises, as they're called, and so failed to meet the terms of the contract. Opel's contract required it to provide coverage to 90% of such homes. Both Singtel and Futurus insist that they had met all the conditions in the contract, adding that its termination sends the wrong signals to the industry. So does this open the door again for Telstra? Or was it never shut in the first place? And why did Telstra turn on ADSL2 in all exchanges recently? A policy shift for no apparent reason? We'll take an in-depth look at this decision and its ramifications from a political, consumer, and technical point of view.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Adam Turner looks at embedded mobile phones in your body. Secondary school kids asked to give fingerprints as ID for exams. Mozilla Firefox 3 Beta 5 hits the streets. And Microsoft's OpenOffice XML is now a standard. First up, though, here's the latest happenings from the Tech Talk News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, power supplies are cut to thousands of Melburnians. Opel's billion-dollar broadband deal scrapped by the federal government. Laser pointers to be banned after attacks on planes. Australia's bid for the world's biggest radio telescope. And Google gets sued for street-level information privacy breaches. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Thousands of Melburnians are still without power after fierce storms lashed metropolitan suburbs on Wednesday last week. The tail end of Cyclone Pancho damaged buildings and uprooted trees across Victoria. An estimated 420,000 people lost power at the height of the storm in the early hours of Wednesday afternoon. As of Saturday, electricity provider Alinta still had 7,500 customers waiting for connection, while SP AusNet still had 3,000 customers without power. The state opposition has called for an inquiry into the management of supply reconnection and why it's taken so long for many families to have electricity restored. Energy spokesman Mr. Robert Clark spoke on Melbourne Radio last week.
Granted that the storms that we've suffered this week have been pretty horrific, nonetheless, questions need to be asked about whether the response has been adequate, particularly in the context of the deteriorations in overall reliability that have been experienced in Victoria over the last 2 or 3 years.
The Essential Services Commission is Victoria's independent economic regulator of electricity, gas and water services. Chief Executive Mr. Paul Fearon spoke on Melbourne Radio last week and said the power companies were doing their best to restore services in difficult conditions.
I think
nature of the industry, the nature of the assets on the ground means that these sort of events do and can have significant impact on people, and regrettably there are a large number of people who can be without power for some time.
The government was in talks over the weekend with emergency services and power companies to arrange financial aid and food for those struggling to cope without electricity. Federal Communications Minister Stephen Conroy last week scrapped the former coalition government's billion-dollar regional broadband deal with the Opel consortium. Mr. Conroy said the decision was made after an internal analysis showed that Opel could not provide coverage reasonably equivalent to 90%. But Optus argued that Senator Conroy's decision was based on flawed data. Optus CEO Mr. Paul O'Sullivan said that in his view, the Department of Broadband, Communications and the Digital Economy has now made a flawed recommendation to the minister. In a tit-for-tat environment between the former coalition government and the incumbent telecommunications carrier Telstra last year, the billion-dollar deal was awarded to Opel by Senator Helen Coonan to provide broadband to the bush using a combination of fixed and wireless technology. Telstra has welcomed Senator Conroy's announcement, with Jeff Booth, Telstra Countrywide Group Managing Director, saying it was a common-sense decision. A recent spate of attacks on aircraft from household laser pointers has prompted the federal government to introduce import bans on the handheld devices. Laser pointers are used legitimately by lecturers, surveyors and IT professionals, but a number of recent incidents near Sydney Airport, where pilots have reported green lasers being aimed directly into planes' cockpits, have prompted an urgent review of legislation to ban high-powered laser devices. The federal government confirmed it will restrict the importation of laser pointers after a high-level meeting between state and federal politicians, police and customs officials on Friday last week. New South Wales police have so far been unable to locate the offenders involved in the attacks. Australia's Prime Minister is supporting a bid by Australian scientists to provide a site for the world's largest radio telescope. SKA, the Square Kilometre Array project, will be made up of thousands of dishes across Australia, making it 50 times more sensitive than any radio telescope available today. While Australia is bidding against South Africa to build the telescope, astronaut Andy Thomas says Australia is a prime contender for the project, citing economic wherewithal, intellectual capital, infrastructure and political stability as giving Australia a leading edge over other contenders. The telescope would be comprised of clusters of antennas spread over thousands of kilometres, with a core site expected to be built at Bullaby Station, which is 300 kilometres northeast of Geraldton. And a Western Pennsylvanian couple are suing internet search giant Google for invading their privacy after photos of their home on the Street View website were allegedly taken by Google trespassing in the family's driveway. A lawyer for Aaron and Christine Boring said that Google entered their private driveway to take street-level pictures and that the pictures of their home have violated the couple's privacy and devalued their property. A Google spokesman said the property owners can get the company to remove images if they cite a good reason and can prove they own the property depicted. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Let's talk about Telstra, $9 million Olympic deal.
It's all going to run a lot smoother in the future, which is going to be good. It's going to be good for business. It's going to be much easier.
What's disappointing is that they've got the opportunity to set up
to really do it properly, haven't they?
Do it properly, and they haven't.
He's never short of an opinion, is he?
No, he's not.
Telstra, if you want to explain what's going on with the next week coverage, give us an email.
Yeah, yeah, you can have it if you want to have something go rip ding.
Oh, no.
Is that what it sounded like?
Yes, it was.
First day back at work today? Crikey.
Oh, good. I'm going away. I don't care.
Now, it's interesting that Simon's a Gmail user.
We did know that poor old Google did. They were compromised.
Slash rant.
The spam is becoming a real issue again.
For years and years, though, every phone I bought was Nokia, and I still use one. Is that?
You'd do a pretty snazzy website for 20 mil, wouldn't you?
Absolutely.
You give them the five pages, contact us, customers.
Even optimise it.
Where's your note?
Where's my note?
Yeah.
I attend here more often than you do, buddy.
It says me.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
It's good to be back in your headphones. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio for yet another week.
Andrew McComb here, Dr. Ron and Graham Callaghan. Boys, how are we this evening?
I'm here and I'm well, thanks. Andrew, how are you?
You are. Did you bring a note like you said in the teaser there?
No, I didn't. Don't need a note. It's been 3 or 4 weeks in a row now.
It's been impressively, what's the word?
Reliable.
Consistent.
Consistent, yes.
Yes.
I'm glad you feel that way.
Happy birthday, Dr. Ron. Happy birthday, Dr. Ron.
Oh, thank you very much. It's very kind.
And you brought in the cake too. We're going to try and set the webcam up later tonight and we can show people what the cake looks like.
Well, Mrs. Dr. Ron's done an excellent job. She's got happy birthday, Dr. Ron on the
That's
cake.
That's very good.
So if we can't get the webcam going, we'll take a photo or something because we can't cut into that before we...
So is there a file in there so you can escape?
From here, tonight, maybe. She's saying the show ends in 2 hours. You need to be home in 2 hours and 10 minutes. Okay.
So how many birthdays is it now, Dr. Ron?
23. It's been 20 for a few years.
Yeah. You're looking pretty good for 19, I reckon.
Thank you very much. Okay. Very kind of you to say.
Yes. Oh, dear. Well, yes, been a very interesting week in technology as per normal. The bombshell was dropped, which to a lot of people wasn't that unexpected in some circles, about the Opel consortium being given the old heave-ho. Thanks for coming. You're not quite managing to meet the requirements of said coverage area. And now they put it up for a tender again. I think also, Dr. Ron, you alluded, I think last week, or might have even been the week before, that repetition in rollout, where we're going to get two networks, that was also one of the concerns of the government this week.
It was one of the considerations. Yeah, we had it there as a news item. So in case you missed that, the Federal Communications Minister, Stephen Conroy, has scrapped the former coalition government's $1 billion regional broadband deal. Mm. So they were aiming at about 90%. It's coverage, weren't they?
Yeah, they were going to
use
underserved or underrepresented premises.
Mm, and they were going to do it by using a wireless technology called WiMAX.
That's it.
And the problem area was Queensland. Just didn't work in Queensland, apparently.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, Senator Conroy said that it's his department that's done an analysis of the facts and figures, and he believes that they will only cover 72% with their proposal.
Mm.
Lies, right. Damn lies and statistics.
Yes, you can prove anything with
with those numbers.
Statistics.
With statistics,
yeah,
yes.
That's the word you're looking for.
You can't say the word statistics when you need to, but you can prove a lot with them.
Now, it's going to be interesting for Telstra because they went into bat with the Honourable... I'm having your problem tonight,
yes,
Craig.
Sorry.
The Honourable Senator Helen Coonan over this very said issue, and transparency was not apparently forthcoming.
Mm.
And so I guess everyone from both sides of the camp, government and private sector, are also probably going to be fairly, except for two companies, going to be fairly happy that it's up for grabs again and going to be part of the big picture now rather than just split in half and rural and things.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what the new plan is that emerges from it all. But I, for one, was never happy that they were using such a reliance on a wireless technology. That seemed to me to be the wrong approach.
And a flawed wireless technology, as we're about to hear. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is our email address. Feel free to send us an email there whilst we're on air. We'd love to hear from you all. Also, our SMS number is 0430582077. You can send us a text there. We actually did get a text the other day too. Says he bringing it up on the screen. It says, love the show, streaming now via switch1197.com. Anthony from... something or other .net.
We won't disclose your personal email address, Anthony, so, but thanks for listening. It's great.
So if you want to send us a text, we're listening. The text screen is up on the as we speak. So, feel free to contribute. We'd like to hear from you. And, of course, the forum at forum.techtalkradio.com.au. Now, getting back to Opel, however you'd like to call them, a consortium of two companies, Singtel and Elders.
Yep, Singtel owning Optus, which is the op part of it.
Yep. The op part, yes. Let's have a bit of a recap of what's happened over the past few days and where we are now. In the meanwhile, feel free, send us an email.
Bring out your date! Bring out your date!
The Howard government's plan for a $1 billion rural broadband network is dead. The federal government has scrapped the Opel WiMAX network on the grounds that the contractors failed to meet the required conditions. Futurus Corporation, which owns Elders, and Singapore Telecommunications, Optus's parent, both told the Australian Stock Exchange of the cancellation of the contract last week. Futurus and Optus, in equal partnership called Opel, were awarded a US$958 million contract by the Howard government to construct a broadband network for rural and regional Australia. The Communications Minister, Senator Stephen Conroy, says his department has established that Opel WiMAX would only cover 72% of identified underserved premises, as they're called, and so failed to meet the terms of the contract. Opel's contract required it to provide coverage to 90% of such homes. The highly anticipated decision makes way for Senator Conroy's $4.7 billion national broadband network contract to proceed. Senator Conroy came to the decision when internal analysis conducted by his department showed that Opel could not provide coverage reasonably equivalent to 90%. Stephen Conroy.
The decision was based upon an assessment that was performed by my department, the Department of Broadband Communications and the Digital Economy. My department's assessment showed that Opel did not meet coverage requirements set out in the conditions precedent of the contract. The Rudd government publicly committed to honouring the contract between the Commonwealth and Opel. As the conditions precedent of the contract were not met, the contract has been terminated. Regional and rural Australia will not miss out on improved broadband services as a result of this decision. The Rudd government has committed up to $4.7 billion and regulatory changes to build a new national broadband network that will deliver minimum connection speeds of 12 megabits per second to 98% of Australian homes and businesses. The 2% who will not have direct access to the new network will be able to receive support through the Australian Broadband Guarantee.
The question needs to be asked, was this a flawed proposal from the start based on the backroom deals and then Howard government's falling out with Telstra? Broadband was a hot political issue in the lead-up to the last federal election. And last June, the Communications Minister at the time, Senator Helen Coonan, was busy spruiking the benefits of the contract awarded to the Optus and Elders Consortium.
Basically, what we'll be offering is universal coverage at a fraction of Labor's cost in 2 years' time, and that will then also allow people living in rural and regional areas to get metro comparable prices.
But 9 months on, and with a new federal government and an activist broadband minister in the shape of Senator Stephen Conroy, the deal is now off. Optus CEO Paul O'Sullivan said, in his view, the Department of Broadband Communications and the Digital Economy had now made a flawed recommendation to the minister, reflecting serious errors in its database of underserved premises, which led to its underestimate of the number of locations which would benefit. He went on to say Opel believes the department's process was flawed. Information was not provided to Opel in accordance with its contract, and there was little dialogue with Opel after it lodged the implementation plan in early January. The government also was concerned that the networks would be duplicated, as it has proposed its own fibre-to-the-node broadband plan, according to the statements. Naturally, Futurus and Optus maintain the Opel plan satisfies the prescribed coverage requirements. If the companies are unable to recover money from the government, Futurus will make a provision of $15 million as a non-recurring item, and Optus will write off $9 million. According to Opel, the cancelled plan would have delivered improved broadband services to 889,322 underserved premises in rural and regional Australia within 2 years at metro-comparable prices. But did the contract's cancellation really come as a shock to industry analysts? Telco analyst Mark McDonnell.
It comes as some shock. The parties who were directly involved had been telling the market that they expected a confirmation of the funding arrangements fairly soon. So this is really quite contrary to that.
Tech Talk Radio panellist and CDMA optimiser Mark Diggins was sceptical in the way Opel had mapped out its coverage.
When they decided to show how much coverage they would have from the WiMAX rollout, they put a dot on the map and then drew a circle around it. They didn't take into account any of the topography.
Hills.
Yep.
We're
they
the
didn't
hills.
Take into account any of the dense foliage and how that affects radio waves and that sort of thing. Yeah, you know, we've all worked in radio in this, you know, on the radio technical side of things, and we know that, you know, it's hard to predict radio coverage and that sort of thing. And I think Telstra went in and showed what they thought would actually happen and where they could roll out and that sort of thing. And this other one have just gone, no, here's a dot on the map, draw a circle around it, that's our coverage site, without taking into account all these other things. And it 2.5 gigahertz or wherever they're going to roll it up there. It's like we described when NextG was rolling out. It's better to roll it out at 800 megs. You'll actually get further coverage than roll it out at 2.1 gigahertz sort of thing. So if this is rolling out at that frequency, it's not going to get very far.
So what's actually occurred here is that the government has decided unilaterally that one of the conditions of the contract hasn't been met, and that therefore they are under no obligation to provide $958 million of funding that was previously committed. So is there an element of politics involved in the decision? Mark McDonald again.
At one level, there is a political dimension to it. At another, it's a commercial process. And at yet another level, it is about technology choices and policies relating to how broadband services are going to be delivered outside of the capital cities.
The decision has been welcomed by Telstra, which pitched for the rural broadband contract but failed. Telstra's regulatory chief, Jeff Booth, is keen to pitch for the contract again.
Clearly the government has judged that this consortium, the Singtel and Elders Opel consortium, failed to meet the requirements, the fundamental requirements of the contract.
So is this Telstra saying, I told you so?
No, I think this is just a great opportunity now for the industry and the government to work together to provide a solution which really is going to serve, well, regional Australians, but all Australians, well and truly into the 21st century. And the way that we see it within Telstra is that the industry and the government's now got a great opportunity to provide the right technology to service Australians and build the network properly. So rather than build a piecemeal network, build a network which is going to be rolled out appropriately and really get out to all Australians. There are so many people that will benefit from a broadband network which delivers all of the health and the education requirements that people are going to need into the future.
Telstra took this decision to court and targeted the former communications minister, Senator Helen Coonan, personally. Is this vindication?
I guess that's all history now, and from our point of view, we just now want to do what we believe we do best, and that is to go out there and look after our customers and build this network with the government.
The future of broadband for rural Australia is once again up in the air. Or is it? Paul Budd, an independent telecommunications analyst, says this decision means the new government can get on with its plans to roll out its so-called broadband revolution.
I think that this government's plans for the future of broadband are quite different from the last government. And this government really had a national view, a vision of how to take broadband forwards into this country. The previous government was more like a hopscotch sort of solutions, something for here, something for there, etc. So, you know, having a national approach and then having lingering on something on the side like Opel was not really something that fitted the new government's sort of plan of action.
Bring out your dead!
Here's one.
Ninepence.
I'm not dead.
What? Nothing. Here's your ninepence.
I'm not dead.
Here. He says he's not dead.
Yes, he is.
I'm not.
He isn't?
Well, he will be soon. He's very ill.
I'm getting better.
No, you're not. You'll be stone dead in a moment.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
So there's the Opel wash up.
Stone dead.
Stone dead, yes. I'm not dead yet.
I think it is.
Anyway, that sounded fairly terminal to me. Hopefully there's a bit of a clue as to what's going on. Everyone goes, yes, clear as mud now. But I think it's pretty straightforward. What they were trying to offer is what the government thought, well, in hindsight, I don't think you can really deliver.
Mm.
And I think from a political point of view, the Rudd government has to now basically give it its best shot. I know he was talking about 12 megabits per second, which I think in about 5 years' time is going to be awfully slow, but nonetheless, at least we're starting to roll out some form of broadband for all Australians. And for those of you listening overseas, we're a fairly sizable country here, as you're probably no doubt aware, and we don't have the density of population to support such high speed
rollout. Sizable in terms of space and not population, which is a most unfortunate combination.
Yes. So there we go. That's the rollout. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Dr. Ron, Andrew McComb and Graham Callaghan in this evening. Although that must admit, I got another. You know how last week we were talking about NextG coverage?
We were.
And I was telling you about the fact that I took a handset up to the property where we live and we're approximately 8 kilometres from an exchange.
Yes, and I encouraged you to contact Telstra
and
let them know about the shortfall in the network.
I did.
What did they say?
Well, if you go to the very front of the Telstra homepage, there's the phone number 1-800-888-888, I think it is, which you ring if you want to dob in a cell that's not working or something to that effect. Anyway, I did actually ring this number. I was over my lunch. I thought, oh, well, I'll sit down and eat and we'll give it a go.
You've got half an hour for lunch. It can't possibly take more than 30 minutes to get through to someone and report this.
Anyway, 29 minutes and 42 seconds.
See?
And three telemarketers later, I finally got to convey my message to Telstra that the service area, which according to their map was perfect for handheld coverage.
It was where you needed it.
Where I needed it, everywhere I needed it, and it wasn't there. And I thought I'd ring and tell them about that.
But why did it take you 29 minutes?
Well, when I went to the first person, the first person said, that's interesting, and then tried to say, have you got the right handset? And I said, I've got a handset with a blue tick on it. In fact, if you go to your webpage, it's the very front page phone there on your website. Okay. Have you tried an external antenna? Well, if you knew anything about the handset, there is no provision for an external antenna. It has a blue tick on it, but it has no provision for an external. Oh, it must be a handset that's faulty. I said, no, I don't think the handset's faulty because I had beautiful coverage all the way across the NextG network, all the way up there. And it's only when I reached my destination where you allegedly, according to your service maps, have coverage. Oh, hang on, I'll put you through to the next apartment.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah. Anyway, so we've done the basic, you know, ascertain that it wasn't that. Anyway, I spent another 10 minutes on hold waiting to speak to the next person.
And they said, welcome to Telstra. My name's Blair. How can I help you? Yes.
How did you know? Have you done this sort of call before too?
Maybe once or twice.
I repeated the story to a similar effect, to which the outcome was fairly similar.
Maybe you've got a faulty handset. I'll pop you through to...
This is the next line of defences. Within Telstra. By now, you've got a customer who's pretty narky, who's not getting anywhere, but the next telemarketer sort of started to tell jokes.
Right.
And they were fairly lame ones at that too. So anyway, we persisted here with it a little bit, and she put me on hold and tested things and did this and did that, and came to the conclusion, oh, you need to speak to someone in network design, or words to that effect. I can't remember exactly what the words were. Anyway, then I spoke to another chap, and this is probably about the 25-minute mark of the 29-minute and 42-second phone call, to which he said, okay, I'll log it as a fault. Thanks for that. We'll get back to you in 3 days. How many days do you reckon that's been since then?
Oh, the last Tech Talk Radio was 7 days ago. I'm guessing about 6.5 days.
Yeah, about five. Yeah, you're not far off the mark. I still haven't heard from them or anything like that. So you just have to ask how serious they are if they do want to switch off CDMA on the 28th day of this month. And you hear these guys on the radio, the senior Telstra exec, saying, oh, we're really keen. And you get that level of service when you ring 1-800-888-888. Anyway, there you go. That was my experience. Telstra on the trail of copper thieves. Now, this is fairly, high in the news. You hear it on the news these days about railway lines being put out of action because of missing cable and things like that.
Yeah, I was seeing on the news that there was some, the police have been tracking them down too and seizing containers and exciting things.
Doing some excellent work on that front. So hopefully the Chinese semiconductor business is going to be... we'll probably come back and bite us on the bottom because all the prices will be dear because I have to pay top dollar for real copper rather than the stuff from the railways.
But the good side is that your trains aren't cancelled in the morning because the signal's shut down.
Absolutely right. But you would have paid twice as much for your MP3 player that you got in your ear because they're not being subsidised by the Victorian or Australian railway systems. But anyway.
It's like the three mobile plans. It's a delicate balance, isn't it?
We have to
find a happy medium for everybody.
Well, anyway, copper theft. Apart from the railways, Telstra isn't immune either. Copper theft from telecommunications, power and transport infrastructure in Australia is rising as an exodus of investors from equities markets drive the price of metals to almost $4.40 a pound. What's a pound these days? How many kilos in a pound? Anyway.
It's about $2.50 in a pound, isn't there?
Something.
Wrong pound.
Renewed interest in the commodities has pushed the price from less than $1 US in March to a high of $4 in March this year. But investors have not been alone in embracing the base metal. Police from the US and Britain have also reported absolute surges in thefts of copper. So,
hi, Serge.
I don't think we're... he's a good guy, Serge. Yes. He does good audio.
He does.
I don't think we're immune from it over here.
We're not. It's an international problem.
Yeah.
Yes. People are experiencing this everywhere. There's cables being stolen.
So if you're sitting at home in the rural parts of the countryside and you're having a chat on the phone and it goes dead and you've got no dial tone, chances are someone's nicked your copper.
Yeah.
Telstra Director of Corporate Security and Investigations, Jules Scarlett, said the situation in Australia was also worsening. The telco has had copper networks spanning the length and breadth of the country. Well, there's another reason why we should all go wireless. We don't need copper anymore.
True. The problem is you always need copper somewhere at the moment. We can't transfer energy without wires, can we? Well, we can, but
not all that terribly efficiently, and we don't tend to do it.
That's right. We can send communication signals without wise, but at the end of the day, if we want to transfer energy, which is powering.
But are people going to nick things with high voltages through it?
Yes.
But yes, because people are stupid.
Are they?
Yes.
What is it, though? Why do they nick?
It's called Darwinism.
Well, the theory of evolution going awfully wrong.
Yes, very much so. It's the theory of evolution going awfully right. It's these people are removing themselves from the gene pool.
It is a theory of evolution going terribly wrong because they're not succeeding in removing themselves. We're not finding them, you know, zapped on the train lines. They're actually succeeding in getting the copper out, which is really bad.
Anyway, so there you go. Watch your copper, everybody, if you've got some on your property. Copper fences and stuff like that. Also, in the news this week, let's change the tack of the show absolutely completely. Websites win the right to show games clips. Now, this is talking about the Olympic Games, which is coming up in China. Later this year. Despite the brouhaha with the torch that's going around at the moment, I don't know whether you saw that on the news, a couple of rugby tackles there in the UK as the torch was going past the Queen's home.
That was amazing. Protesters with fire extinguishers trying to put the thing out.
Yes.
What's the world coming to?
Well, anyway,
good question.
If the Olympics do manage to go ahead with all the protests, and I'm sure they will, internet sites in Australia will be allowed to show short video clips of Olympic events for the first time during the Beijing Games, following a historic agreement announced just the other day between Channel 7 and the International Olympic Committee. So, because up until recently, it's a bit like Bernie Eccleston's Grand Prix, the Formula Ones. There's two feeds you have, one with a timer on it and one without, the clean and the dirty feed. And you can't put that anywhere. You can't use that. Or, you know, you've got to be very, very careful how you use it, especially if you're a broadcaster. And I think only news services can rebroadcast it. And this is the same with the Olympics. You've got to be very much on your toes as to where you can use footage from the Olympics. Otherwise, people will chase you and hunt you down. And solicitors will be sending big concrete shoemakers around with you and all that sort of stuff.
The International Olympic Committee are one of those mobs that is very sharp on protecting their intellectual property rights in all kinds of areas. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they're not people you want to cross in that regard.
Graham, Microsoft Open Office XML, now a standard. What do you think about this? Good, bad, indifferent? Two standards, one standard. Where are we?
It was going to happen because Microsoft were going to win one way or another. I think it's unfortunate that we needed another standard because there was previously an XML standard for Office documents, which Microsoft then and created their own.
Is this the Samson and Goliath type sort of battle here happening? The people with the biggest, the deepest pockets and the biggest software development platforms have the ability to call the standards?
I think there's an element of that in there, yeah. And I think that's unfortunate. And I think the Europeans have done well in trying to at least get some control over it. But yes, inevitably Microsoft, we're going to get their standard up, I think.
But don't you think that also it's going to be good for everybody? Because Microsoft is so well and truly entrenched in today's business community that you might as well have a standard which they agree with and they conform with and everybody else can toe the line. But well, if it's open, everyone should be able to just...
Everybody should.
It too.
The problem is that some people say there are parts of this Office Open XML that aren't fully defined, that you can't follow unless you are Microsoft. Things that say format this the way Word 97 did it, and then they don't define how Word 97 did it.
Do you want to just briefly tell everybody what OpenOffice XML actually is?
Okay, it's a document format for storing things like Word documents or word processing documents, spreadsheets, those sorts of things, that stores in plain text using plain text tags to identify how the document should be formatted and what particular elements are. So you might have the same way, if you've ever looked at how you write web pages in HTML, you would write a word processing document in Office Open XML. In a similar format, you'd say, here's where you'd have a tag that says what follows is the header, and then you'd have the text of the heading.
So we're moving away from the proprietary file format. I think we've had Sarah from Microsoft in. She spoke about this recently in an interview, I think, last year.
Yeah, the old way of doing it was that it was a binary format.
And you could never read it in a plain text view or anything. But at least this way, if your file gets corrupted and you've got a big file, and let's face it, there's lots of big files out there in databases and spreadsheets, you'll at least be able to recover some of it. You won't lose all of it. And I think that's a really good...
That's a big part of it. It also means that it's much easier to search for, say, words within the documents So if you want to search all the word processing documents and spreadsheets and other things on your system for the words Tech Talk Radio, it's much easier to do that if they're in a plain text XML type format rather than in a binary format. So it's going to improve.
How does it go with the virus or something like that? Because, you know, that's traditionally macros and things is how people used to send doc files and the likes in emails. Do you reckon Open Office is going to make that harder or easier?
I think it'll have negligible impact because that part of the document that's a macro will still have to be the same format. It'll have to either be in uncompiled VB code or it'll be a compiled binary format.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be no change to that part of the way it works, I suppose. Mm-hmm. I suspect it'll be just as vulnerable as it has been in the past. Right. Maybe a little bit more because people will know how the document format works, and perhaps a little bit less because the good guys know how the document format works as well, so it'll be a lot more transparent. So I think that'll balance out.
Adam Turner has an opinion on this, as he does with everything. Not that we're going to go to View to the Couch right now, just the email he's just sent, which says, Graham's right, it's not really open. Do you agree?
That's what I believe from what I've read, that there are parts of it that are not fully open, which is most unfortunate.
Which makes you
particularly when we already had
something that was
OpenOffice.org's format, which was open completely.
So which part of it's not open?
Well, the part that says format this like Word 97 did it.
Oh, yeah.
And they're not fully defining how Word 97 did it because you only know that if you're Microsoft. And
so why don't we call
Microsoft really need that because they really need the backwards compatibility. They really need that if you've created a document in Word 97 that you can import that into the new format and it'll still look the same. Well, that's why Microsoft are upset and can't use the old format because they need to keep that compatibility.
Why don't we call it PoxML, partly open XML?
Yes, well,
is that be good? That be more beneficial?
It might be more truth in advertising, yes.
Let's ponder that, and when we come back, we'll hear Adam's view from the couch tonight about implants of all things.
Compelling.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Judicious.
The question is really whether young people particularly are addicted to being connected to other people all the time.
Historical.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history. This is the day, the 6th of October, in 2006, that life in Australia will be changed forever.
Caring.
I know as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school. How can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
You heard of road rage? What about web rage?
They should be wearing a mask and carrying a gun.
Relations between Telstra and the federal government have been extremely strained almost from the moment Sol Trujillo became chief executive.
Optus had quite a good quarter, but its 3G service is very low profile at the moment.
And the Queen's got an iPod.
Betty's got one.
Yeah.
I wonder what she listens to. She'll probably listen to us.
An unexpectedly high number of voters swamped the system. Well, what did they expect?
Controversial.
Less attention is paid to the equally interesting question, should journalists blog?
Magical.
And I've got some residual powers.
Ambitious.
High-speed broadband, it's available in most of Asia as well as being in the rest of the world. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
Religion.
Talking of the Roman Catholics, I have been on Vatican Radio.
Comedy.
You put the date on ePray, it goes, and you get a whole service. Just on. How does it go? It goes.
Insightful, entertaining, and informative. Tech Talk Radio. More than just technology.
It's a strictly rehearsed and finely polished program.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio, wherever you may happen to be listening to us around Australia, around the world, whether you're on the stream, the World Wide Web, listening to us on the podcast, going to work in the loop as we get train travellers from in the UK on the tube. We've got some listeners there who listen to us. Pretty amazing when you think about the technology, isn't it?
Adam Turner's an Aerosmith fan. I didn't know that.
Didn't you?
No.
That'll make no sense to anyone who's listening to the podcast.
It won't at all.
Now.
Send Adam your pirated Aerosmith album set.
Absolutely. Now, Dr. Ron, tell us about, you did some research from some of the comments coming up last week about cell information in mobile phone base stations, of all things.
Firstly, I was only talking about RDS. You mentioned that on your new mobile phone, the new Sony Ericsson, you were getting...
The clean one.
The clean one, the one that works.
Yes.
That you get the radio station
information
when you're listening to your FM radio.
I do.
It tells you the... It says whatever
what station you're listening
what
to.
What station you're listening to. That's a system called RDS. Which is a radio...
An acronym for what?
It's a acronym for radio... I'm looking here in my notes. You'd think I'd have that, wouldn't you? Radio data system. Radio broadcast data system.
Just make it up if we go
along. Okay, well, that's the official name used for the US
radio
version.
Radio data system,
I did a quick wiki on it. There is a digital signal which is broadcast along with the analog audio signal.
Mm-hmm.
And not only... There's actually standards. So not only can it provide you with information about the station you're listening to,
yep.
It can also provide you with... traffic information.
Who provides this information?
The actual station itself. So it sets up the radio transmitter up on the mountain.
Does it?
Yeah, and they actually transmit.
It's very clever.
Yeah, at the same time, they can send you other information. And they can send you text information so it can scroll across your display. So if it's
this is what digital radio is going to do.
Yeah, that sort of thing. Look, it's been in Europe and the UK for like 10 years or more, but we're just starting to awaken to this amazing technology down under, aren't we? So, yes. Now, the sinister thing, have a listen to this. In addition, RDS is being proposed as the data transmission protocol in California's pioneering Programmable Communicating Thermostat Program.
What?
This would allow... This is almost should be an odd spot, shouldn't it? This would allow signals from the state or utility to offset temperature settings during grid price events or completely override occupant temperature set points during emergency events. The technology can be extended to other home electricity consuming devices such as hot water heaters, clothes dryers, dishwashers and pool pumps.
Hang on a minute. The government wants to turn my heating on and off.
Yes.
And pool pump.
Yeah.
Don't forget the pool pump.
The technology is being considered for this. So if you're what would happen is your radio would be hooked up to your climate control in your car. So if there's some sort of emergency event and they want you to save petrol or something or turn off your air conditioner, they can send a signal over the radio for your climate control computer to be changed remotely.
But why your car? You're talking pool pumps. You want one at home, wouldn't you?
Well, you'd have to. You'd have to. This is what they're talking about for where this technology could be used. The hope is that consumption of electricity can be thus rationed as an alternative to building more generation capacity.
On the other hand, I have a pair of side cutters.
And you can
I've got a wife.
Yeah. Yeah, so there you go. That's RDS from one extreme to the other, essentially.
Fantastic. And what else did you have? You had something else there, follow-up from last week, too.
I had another follow-up about laser pointers.
Oh, yeah, because there's been some... You wouldn't want to be flying into Sydney at the moment.
No.
Watch out for those green lights in the cockpit.
Did you hear that story on the news?
I did.
Where there's been a spate of attacks on aircraft. There's been idiots on the ground shining green laser pointers into planes that are trying to land at Sydney Airport.
Yeah, Jeff Dudley sent us some stuff through about this the other day. He's one of our avid listeners.
Yeah.
And they're going to try and ban... laser pointers over a certain level if they haven't done it already.
Indeed.
And stop them being imported.
Indeed. I'll tell you how the legislation stands here where we are in Victoria, Australia.
Oh, so it's not uniform?
Oh, no.
I thought the aviation people would be federal, but no, this is a state-by-state regulation,
well,
is it?
There's an act of...
It's like fireworks. You can buy them in Canberra.
Indeed. There's an act of parliament called the Control of Weapons Act in this state. What they're doing in terms of banning imports, that's federal. They're looking at making it like some sort of prohibited import so that will cover everybody. But each state has its own legislation in regards to weapons. And a laser pointer is actually considered to be a prohibited weapon in Victoria.
In Victoria.
Which means you can't actually own one anywhere unless you've got a permit if the output power of the laser is greater than 1 milliwatt.
Now, I asked you this question in advance. How do you get a permit for a laser pointer?
You did ask me that question.
And you said
you
were going
to
find out.
You have to write to the minister. You have to ask the minister for laser pointers, I think.
This is only for the big ones. The little ones that you just use to point at your PowerPoint screen, you can use the below 1 milliwatt ones. Yeah?
If it's below 1 milliwatt grain, that's correct.
Okay.
But if you have one of the early ones, which are like the whopping great big 5 milliwatt monster ones.
Yep.
Really?
Or if you buy a new one, which is in excess of 1 milliwatt, you need to have a permit. You have to have a good reason to have it.
I don't want to catch you on the hop here, but what about other states? Are they following the same line when it comes to permits and laser pointers?
Look, this legislation has been in place in Victoria since 1990. And the regulations which control or determine what is prohibited and what's a controlled weapon and and other classes of weapons, those regulations have been in since 2000. So for the last 8 years, this has been legislated in Victoria. I don't know about the other states.
But it all comes down to catch me if you can, because I haven't found the guys in Sydney that have been doing it.
This is the thing. They've got to catch them, and New South Wales police haven't caught them yet. What they're hoping to do with the new federal legislation is to stop these things being imported or ordered over the internet or what have you.
Oh, well, there you go. So if you've got a 1 milliwatt or greater laser pointer in some parts of Australia, you're in trouble. Don't use it.
Yeah, the law...
If it melts your whiteboard at the school, then there's a problem.
The law says it's a handheld battery-operated article, commonly known as a laser pointer, designed or adapted to emit a laser beam with an accessible emission limit of greater than 1 milliwatt. So if it's up to 1 milliwatt, you're okay. Greater than 1 milliwatt. Hand it into your local police station, I guess.
Absolutely.
Not allowed to have one.
Dr. Ron, does anything get under your skin these days?
In what
we had
context?
This discussion not long when JD, one of our regular Apple gurus, was in about, and you came up with the correct medical term for having something inserted underneath your skin.
Subcutaneous.
Subcutaneous.
Yes.
Yes. What about a mobile phone under your skin? Would you think that'd be good? It's a bit like, you know, the
pets.
Where
does the SIM card go?
Well, yes. All these questions
what
and more.
What are you laughing at? It raises a lot of questions.
Adam Turner took a look at this as from his view from the... What did you call it?
From the subcutaneous couch.
That's the one?
Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio.
Fancy a mobile phone embedded in your body? When Martin Cooper invented the mobile phone 35 years ago, he envisioned a world with people so wedded to wireless connections that they would walk around with devices embedded in their bodies. We're certainly wedded to our mobile gadgets, but are we ready for embedded devices? There's obviously lots of benefits to having your phone under your skin. For starters, you'll never leave it at home or lose it on the bus. It could also draw power from your body, so you wouldn't need to worry about recharging it. There's always the danger that muggers will start chopping off people's arms to steal their phones. But it shouldn't be hard to design the phones with some kind of biometric authentication so they only work for you. There are plenty of medical applications for such a device. Imagine having your phone connected to your pacemaker so if your heart stops, an ambulance is called straight away. You could cut back on regular checkups if your body could automatically keep the doctor updated on your medical conditions. There's obviously health issues to deal with, such as radiation exposure. The question as to whether mobile phones give you cancer has been in the news again recently, with a leading Australian neurosurgeon claiming our favourite gadgets are more dangerous than asbestos or smoking. A year ago, I thought the link between phones and cancer had been quashed for good by the results of a large Danish survey. Danish researchers found no link between cancer and long or short-term mobile phone use during a 20-year study of 420,000 mobile phone users. It's getting hard to know who to believe. I think the biggest hurdle the subdermal mobile phone needs to overcome is the interface. Without a screen and a keypad, you're back to the old days when a phone was just a phone. Advances in voice recognition and natural language query will eventually let us do away with the keyboard, but we'll need computers to read back the answers to our queries, unless we want to hardwire our eyeballs into our phones. Of course, there's always talk of connecting the phone straight into your brain, but this will be the stuff of science fiction for a long time yet. Even then, I'm not sure it's such a good idea. It would be too easy to accidentally call people. It's bad enough calling out the wrong name during sex without actually ringing them as well. I think it's inevitable that we'll eventually have phones and other devices embedded in our bodies, but I don't think your average punter is ready to become a cyborg just yet. In the long run, though, resistance is futile.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Next, they'll be putting your Met card underneath or your public transport card underneath your skin so that you don't have to, you'd never lose it.
Like those recharge little chips or something that like you that. Put in your cat so that you can scan your cat.
You take the cat to Safeway to find out whose kitty this is.
I left my mobile phone at home on the weekend when I went out.
Did you?
I did it quite deliberately because I just started transferring podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And the ETA on the podcast transfer was another 25 minutes, and I thought, I've got to go out for an hour or so. I'll just go out and I'll leave it at home, let it transfer. And
didn't get washed, did it?
No, it was locked away safely in Shack West, so yep. There was no interference.
I feel quite all at sea when I go out without my mobile.
It was a bit of an odd feeling. I haven't done it for a while. There were times when I thought, I went to check that it was there and it wasn't. That's a bit odd. I haven't got my phone with me. But it didn't worry me too much. It was only an hour or so. But maybe if it was a bit longer, I would have got a bit more antsy.
All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We'll be back with the scary parts of the show, the website gadget and odd spot of the week after this.
You're listening.
Dr. Ron?
Here I am listening.
Residual powers.
And I've got some residual powers.
You can't turn off CDMA.
In terms of the volume,
motorists tend to give fingerprints. Now,
we may have digressed.
Talk radio. Talk radio.
Bill Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600
don't open things that are good that you're not expecting, even if they do look good.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1300 664 882 and leave a voice message. That's 1300 664 882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! This thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my own!
For Star Wars lovers across the universe, the R2-D2 home cinema projector. This is what Adam needs. Adam's
probably got one.
He might have one.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah.
You're my only hope.
For Star Wars fans everywhere, the R2-D2 DVD projector is a life-size replica of the Star Wars robot with an integrated CD-DVD player which projects the digital image up to 6.6 metres. External devices can be connected through analog and digital audio and video ports and memory cards.
What do you need ports for? You'd have to use the Force, wouldn't you, Luke?
And memory cards and USB memory sticks can also be connected. But wait, there's more. The R2-D2 DVD projector even has an iPod dock, so you can project photos or videos from your very own lounge room robot. A fully motorized design allows the operator to use a remote control, which incidentally is shaped like the Millennium Falcon, to move R2 forwards, backwards, left and right, and even rotate his head. All yours for the mere sum of $2,599 Australian dollars. You can buy R2-D2 online from www.nico.com. No, let me speak in better English. Nico, R2-D2. N-I-K-K-O, R2-D2.com.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
And if that website wasn't the best one you'd heard all for the entire show, here's the better website of the week, Safe Social Networking.
Oh, this is handy.
.com. We've been talking about Bebo, we've been talking about MySpace and MyFace and all such things, Twitter Tube. This website is designed around Bebo.com's social networking, but has useful resources and safety information for parents and school teachers. So this site has videos which cover topics such as online bullying, cyber safety and anonymity, as well as teaching materials and links to other online resources. So if you're a parent with young children who are starting to use the internet, or if you're a teacher, then this website might be useful for you. It's safesocialnetworking.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
While the opening of Heathrow's new Terminal Number 5 has not been without its problems, a computer glitch is being blamed for a coffee shop bill for 4 cappuccinos, costing £360,000.
Well, that's not wrong. That's Melbourne Airport.
Terry Patsalidis.
Sydney Airport, Brisbane Airport. That's right. What are you? That's not the
odds. £360,000. So we want to be good.
It's a bit excessive.
Good coffee beans. Terry Patsalidis of Ealing, West London, downed 4 cappuccinos in Terminal 5 and was hit with a bill for £360,000. She was waiting to meet a traveller and was handed the huge printout at the Giraffe Juice Bar. She said, "The baggage delay was so long, I finished off 4 coffees. When I got the printout, I told the waitress that, although they were very nice, I thought £90,000 a cup was a bit over the top. She went bright red when she saw my bill and said it should have been for £12. Terry works for Chiswick Auctions and was waiting to meet a client arriving from Hong Kong. A giraffe juice bar worker said it was just a glitch in the computer system. The bill was cancelled and everyone had a laugh.
Well, that's good. As long as they did have a laugh, the sense of humour is what's required.
And another chai latte on the giraffe juice bar.
Oh, that's very handy. Yes. They gave her one on the house. They should, really. If you've got a bill like that, you'd nearly fall over backwards and go, no, this can't be right.
There you go. Computer glitches everywhere.
Absolutely.
I think the same people that did the computers for that do the catering at the foot of you down here.
Oh, yes.
Then yes.
That's what they'd love to charge. There's people out there going, yes, we charge that much for a coffee.
$29.95 for a meat pie.
Hey, next week, we've got a legend coming onto the show, Brett De Hoot from Hootville. He's
Hootville
on next week.
Fame.
If he doesn't pull the pin on us beforehand, we're going to be talking about email marketing and social networking probably, but it'll be worth tuning in for, ladies and gentlemen. This man is a very funny man. His roots are in radio. He's been on many more radio stations than I can remember, and that's a few of them.
So I'll look forward to having Brett on the program. It'll be great listening.
Till next week, on behalf of the Tech Talk Radio team, it's been great being in your iPod earplugs, I reckon, hasn't it? The little white ones, people sitting at the bus stop, you're listening to us. Until next week, it's bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations that take the show, including 3WBC and 3XX in Melbourne, Cairns FM, Switch 1197 in Brisbane, 95.3 Huon FM in Tasmania, Queer FM in WA, and Stop and Go Radio in the United States. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.